2nd, 2018. I say glorious not because it's nice out, but glorious because my man Woody Lashin is in the studio. How you doing, Woody?
I'm doing great, Anthony. Great to be here as always.
So we got a couple weeks to. We got some exciting times coming. We got one more qualifier for the U.S. Open, then we got the U.S. Open in a couple weeks' time, and yeah, we got. It's going to be a pretty exciting one, Shinnecock's redemption for Shinnecock.
I'm not sure, but okay.
Well, you know what? I'm excited for this tournament because I'm tired of hearing about 04. Like, I mean, it was beat to death. Like, I get it. A mistake was made. It was a travesty, you know, and all that stuff. But I'm excited for a new and exciting tournament that will be hosted by Shinnecock.
I think it's just going to be spectacular. I'm just hoping the weather cooperates. Yeah. We've had such, you know, it's been such a slow spring. I don't like call it spring.
Yeah,
although
well,
it feels like spring today, maybe, or really summer today.
I don't know. It's summer, right?
But I'm just hoping the weather cooperates, and we need a little bit of sunshine to get some growth in there to get that fescue up, so you know, when they hit it sideways.
well, Tiger was there. He said it was, and Phil was there as well, and they said that the fescue is pretty difficult. It's just not often that we get, you know, where everything plays like a Chambers Bay, right? They would love to have seen that firm and fast and the whole, like, just way things are supposed to play. And I just, you know, June is a crapshoot.
Well, it's golf.
That's golf.
You never know what you're going to get.
And Mother Nature, that's for sure.
I could tell you this. I think this year, maybe the scores would be low if the conditions are, for some reason, it rains and it's really soft. Mm-hmm. But it'll be a great U.S. Open.
You do. You think so?
It's going to be a great U.S. Open. I do.
You heard it here first, folks.
Oh, yeah, from the source.
Well, I'm looking forward to today's guest. We've got, you know, we may be the only Long Island Golf Talk radio show, but there's one man who's synonymous with Long Island golf, and that's Mark Harmon. And I'm looking forward to talking to him. Been covering local golf. You know, there's two things. I'm grateful for Mark and Newsday. And I think that, one, the way they've covered high school sports over the years. I mean, if they weren't covering high school sports on Long Island, nobody would be covering high school sports on Long Island, and I feel the same way that about Mark than I do like as I do about high school sports. I mean, if Mark wasn't covering Long Island golf, the service that he's done for us on Long Island, for those who love golf on Long Island, we can't repay him. He brings the stories that we love to hear about.
You know, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I don't have kids, but if you have kids,
right,
and they play sports, you're reading Mark stuff all the time.
Yeah,
it's you know, it's spectacular. And listen, that's something I think is very important that we gets covered.
Yep.
As a golfer, I read his column every Thursday.
Yeah.
And I used to guess every Saturday too. I mean, I have always read it and always enjoyed it. He always has great insights. So I'm looking forward to talking to him today and see what's going on.
Yep, I'm gonna talk a little U.S. Open. We got a little bit of everything today, so it'll be good. But let's take our first break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony, and my co-host today is Woody Lashin, co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop. And on the line is Newsday columnist Mark Harmon. Mark, how you doing today?
I'm well, and I'm glad to be with you. I heard you talking. Thank you very much for the kind words for me and for Newsday. And I will tell you that back in the 1980s, I covered high schools, all the sports, and it was very rewarding, and I know that it's a real important aspect of Newsday for all Long Islanders, and we take it very seriously. We did when I was doing it, and they still do it now.
Yep, I mean the coverage has only gotten bigger and better and more comprehensive. It's really fantastic, and you're right, it's an important part of the fabric that makes up Long Island communities.
Yeah, as does golf, and I think that I'm very grateful to my employer and my bosses that they realize what place golf has on Long Island in terms of, basically, and I've been writing about this, and we'll have a special section coming out a week from tomorrow about the U.S. Open, but saying and the point that I make in there is that this is the cradle of American golf. Long Island is where golf was born in the United States.
Yep. Well, before we get to that, because there's plenty to talk about there, but I want to start off with you in the beginnings. First of all, before we get to how you got started about talking about Long Island golf and Newsday, I want to talk about your athletic career in high school. I did not know that you were inducted into the Santa Maritza's Athletic Hall of Fame for basketball. I did not know that you were a prolific basketball player.
Tell us a little bit
about that.
I wasn't. That's very good, but a little misleading. I played basketball, but I played when we were in the down years. They inducted me into the Santa Maritza's High School Hall of Fame for my contributions to sports afterwards.
Oh, okay, okay.
My brother was borderline a basketball Hall of Famer for Santa Maritza's, but not me. Before I came to Newsday, I covered local sports here for a little paper called the Maritza's Bay Tide, and I covered Santa Maritza's, and I covered them in their in the state playoffs and whatnot. But I guess that was an acknowledgement of what they thought that I've done for the Santa Maritza's community as well as the Long Island community.
Mark, tell us a little bit more about your career. So, you know, I know you as Newsday, and I've been reading you since the 80s at Newsday. But, you know, tell us give us a little more about your career, how you've done.
Well, thanks. I'm very fortunate, unlike many people, that I'm doing exactly what I set out to do when I was in high school. I went to Santa Maritza's High School. I still live in Santa Maritza's, but while I was in high school, I wrote for the Long Island Advance. I wrote sports every week, and that's what I wanted to do. and I'm really, really fortunate because it's a very competitive business, but I'm doing exactly what I set out to do. So from there, I went to Rutgers. Right after Rutgers, I went to went right into work for the Maritza's Bay Tide. Then I was at the Southampton Press for a few years. I was there when they were starting to talk about having the 1986 U.S. Open out there, and that was very exciting. But I've been at Newsday since 1983, and I've covered a lot of different things. I was a news writer. I was the high school sports reporter. I was on the Islanders beat for a few years. I was on the Mets beat for one inglorious year. That season. I was there in 1993, the year the worst team money could buy. People might remember the bleach episode, and I was one of the guys that got bleached.
Oh my God! Holy cow!
And then I've been general assignment, and I've general assignment / columnist / sidebar reporter / golf for the past almost 20 years. Really since 2002, I've been like the focus of the golf. That's been my focus.
What's your favorite sport to cover? Is golf your favorite sport, or is there?
I think so. I at this point, because I cover all of them. It kind of depends on what's going on. Because right before golf season this year, I was at the on March Madness, and that's a great sport to cover too. I think, you know, all things considered, golf is a really rewarding thing to cover because you deal with national and local, and you deal with all kinds of people, you know, men and women, people at every economic strata, because everybody plays golf and people work in the game. I think that's what's appealing about it. You get such an array of people that are involved with golf. Thomas Boswell, the great writer from the Washington Post, once said just about sports writing in general, he said, the smaller the ball, the better the writing. And I think golf kind of, I don't know that I agree with that completely, because some really good writing about basketball, college basketball especially. But I think in general, golf does invite that, because it's kind of an introspective game.
Yeah. Okay. With
Do you have a favorite golf story? Do you have a favorite one that you wrote that you did?
Yeah, you know, I always tell people that it's not a big story at the Masters, although I did win an award once for a story at Masters. I probably should start with that one. It was when Tiger came back, when he came back to the Masters after his first go around with problems. And I remember my lead to the story was, well, this is as everybody had anticipated, this has been a year for a great comeback. But then it turned out that it was Amy Mickelson's comeback. that's when Phil won. And I won like one of the biggest awards you can win for that story, Associated Press Sports Editor.
So that's
got a real great place in my heart. But really, if you gave me sodium pentothal and asked me my favorite story, it's a local story on Long Island. I did it a few years ago about a group of guys that play nine holes every Monday morning at Eisenhower Park. And the beauty of this group is they're all 89 years old and older. And one of the guys is 101 years old. I remember my lead on that story was, well, they weren't sure about this guy taking him into the group because they don't know that he was mature enough. He was only 89. But the thing about it is, and I still hear from the guy who's 101. I got an email from him during one of our snowstorms. Someone had taken a picture of him having built a snowman, and so I captioned it, well, he knows that that Eisenhower Park is right around the corner. But I think that kind of illustrates what I'm saying. You really can't get a story like that really in any other sport.
I agree. When did you decide to focus on golf, and how did you make that transition with Newsday? I mean, obviously they were very supportive, but did you bring it to them and they just said yes, or how did it really come about?
That's a good question. They knew that I was always interested in golf. You know, in fact, even while I was I was a news reporter back in 1986. But they knew that I had a great interest in golf, and so even though I wasn't working for the sports department, the sports department tapped me, and they had me on that coverage. So they knew over the years, but they always had someone else covering it. Jeff Williams did a great job covering it, and then Damon Hack was our golf writer for Newsday before he went on to greater things at Sports Illustrated and now on the Golf Channel. But when he left, I think he left for the New York Times back in 2002, right after the U.S. Open at Bethpage, and I just threw my hat in the ring, and they said, "Okay, you're on." And that was it was a different time. The budgets were different. Newspaper budgets were different. And I remember before the 2004 U.S. Open, I was all over the place getting information and getting material for preview stories, including starting at the beginning of the year, I went to Hawaii. I remember they asked me to give a speech at Santa Maria's High School graduation a couple of years ago, and I remember telling them, yeah, the nerve of my bosses, they made me go to Hawaii in January.
That's awesome stuff. Damon Hack was I don't think I could ever transition. I have the face for radio, so I don't think I could ever go to TV. But that was wonderful that they would support, and just to go come full circle, they really ultimately began. They were really supporting something that you had wanted to do since you were in high school. I mean, not many kids. I mean, some kids think they know what they want to do in high school. What was it about writing and sports that gave you that sort of conviction that this was what you wanted to do?
Yeah, it's a good question, I tell people when I talk to them, talk to young people on career day or whatever, I said that I realized early on that I had a great emotional investment in sports. I was a Yankee fan when I was a kid, when the Yankees were really bad, back in the mid-1960s. But then after that, with the Nets and Islanders on Long Island, my dad had season tickets for the Nets and Islanders when they first started, and I just I realized what an emotional investment I had, and how much I just couldn't wait to read about everything that happened to those teams. And I said, this is a way for me to channel whatever skills I might have academically and pair it up with something that I really love to do. I think it was that recognition that the emotional investment I had in sports. Plus, you know, I always loved writing and I loved to read, and so this was a really good combination. The one thing I will add to that is that I really was in school. I probably was better in math. You know, even on the SAT, I did better in math. Like if I were coming up today, I probably would have gone in a different direction. I probably would have gone in the analytics direction and gotten into sports that way.
Sure. Yeah, that's an interesting point. Our guest is Newsday columnist Mark Herman. Mark, I want to get to the U.S. Opens in general on Long Island, but and then of course the PGA and then the Ryder Cup. But we got to take a short break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
At Winfield United, we understand the challenges you face and the goals you have. We promise to do our best and to help you do yours. With the introduction of tools like the Geotech Insight platform and products like Droplex Extra, we are advancing the industry to new levels, allowing you to manage your time and budget more efficiently. Visit WinfieldUnitedPro.com to find a representative near you today. Winfield United, a proud sponsor of the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill level golfers, from our MP18 family featuring three different models designed for the better player to our JPX family featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness. We have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
And we're back. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony, and he's Woody. And on the line is Newsday columnist Mark Herman. Mark, I wanted to talk about the U.S. Opens and how about we haven't had much luck. Are you a little more optimistic for this year's Open or what?
Yeah, the funny thing is, I was looking at the weather for Summit, New Jersey for Monday, because I'm going to be over there to cover the sectional qualifier.
Sure.
And just what came up when I looked for the weather was the weather for the next week and a half. And I said, well, that doesn't look too bad. I said, let me check Southampton. And I said, you know, as of right now, at least for the beginning of the tournament, the weather looks good. For that Thursday and Friday, anyway, that's as far as the weather.com site showed me.
Right.
So it looked pretty good. So I think that would be a good thing. Although I will say that first day at Shinnecock in 1986, the weather was horrendous, but that made for a terrific story. So I guess you can see both ways. But I think it's preferable to have good weather. And in hopes that the wind whips up a little bit, which it has ever since the world has created, out there at Southampton. It just didn't do it for those 4 days, the last two U.S. Opens.
Yep.
You know, Mark, I always tell people, if you want to go watch a great golf tournament, go watch the sectional qualifying for the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
Go on Monday. It's Canoebrook, I believe. Is that
Canoebrook,
correct?
Canoebrook, yeah.
There'll be no ropes. There's going to be amazing players, and you get to watch some amazing golf. And, I mean, that's just where you can watch some of the amateur pressure golf.
Yeah. There's no question about it. On Golf Channel, they call it golf's most exciting day, because all of the sectionals throughout the country are held on that same day. And there's quite an eclectic mix of people that are trying to get into it. But I've seen it, and it can be so rewarding, and I've seen it that it can be so heartbreaking, because it's 36 holes. Everybody's got to play 36 on the same day, and it can come down to like an approach shot or your putt on the last green. I mean, you can't let up even for a second. I've seen it work both ways, some that exhilaration or that utter heartbreak. It really is something, but it just means so much to any golfer to know that you're going to the U.S. Open.
You know, I remember a great story you did. I forget who it was, but he was at 18 par on 18, and he he hit the pin and the ball went back into the rough, and then he didn't realize it was on a sprinkler head and ended up making bogey. Who was that?
That was Bob Ritberger.
Bob Ritberger, yes.
At Garden City
I
Golf
should,
Club.
Oh, I should and, know that. Cause
and it was, just, and I've written about it numerous times since, and he, instead of having a spot locked up, which he did, and he hit a perfect shot. He hit it right where he wanted to. It just happened to hit off the flag stick and bounced over and onto that sprinkler head, and he couldn't really get his club under the ball, and he wound up making a bogey when, you know, or even maybe a double bogey when he only needed was a par, and he wound up being an alternate at the U.S. Open that year, and he stayed on the putting green basically all day. He wasn't even allowed to go and practice on the course. If you're an alternate, you're not allowed to do that. But he stayed on the practice green all day just in case someone didn't show, and that didn't happen. It was really a heartbreak. But that's something that you always think about with these sectional qualifiers.
That was such a great story. I remembered. I should. Yeah. Bob Ripper is a friend of mine, so I should remember that was him. And I actually was. I thought it was. I wasn't 100% sure. But
well, and the thing about it is, and Bob was such. He was so gracious about the whole thing. You know, other people might have been very, very reticent to talk about it, but Bob embraced it. You know, he realized that's golf, and you know, when you get involved in something like this, that's kind of the risk you take. And I think he's a good role model for his members and for his kids and for anybody who is interested in golf. I just the way he handled that to this day, the way he's still handling it.
You're 100% right, and that's why he's a first class guy.
He really is.
Mark, what are you looking forward to most to the Open at Shinnecock in 2 weeks time?
I want to see how the course holds up, and I think it's going to be great. You were there at the preview day that we all have assurances from the USGA that what happened in 2004 is not going to happen again. In fact, I've talked with Mike Davis, the CEO of the USGA, numerous times over the years about that, and I think last year, the year before, he says, if that happens again, we all quit. and they have a lot of they have so much such a much better array of equipment that can tell them how the turf is doing, and plus I think that the lines of communication are better between the USGA and the club, and I think that who really knows what happened there, but I think I'm just interested to see how the course holds up, how the changes they made impact play. You know, it's even though that they went back and they added some more rough after Erin Hills last year, after they saw that it was no challenge whatsoever to the best golfers in the world, they added rough. But even having done that, the fairways are much wider than they were in 2004. So I think that's what I'm looking forward to, is seeing what sort of challenge the course is this time.
Has that rough grown in nicely? I mean, I remember that, you know, they right after Erin Hills, they're like, okay, we got to change this.
Yes.
And they had done so much other stuff before that with moving tees back. I mean, there's tees there, but you know, on the second hole, you look back and go, how are they going to play from back there?
You have to take like a bus back there.
And number 14, you know,
14, yes.
Being there in 1986, and there was a cabin there where Charlie Tom, the old pro, who was there for 54 years, he used to live there. And I remember in 86, they used that, and the hedges behind his house, that was like the backdrop for all the interviews. I mean, that's all gone. They just cleared it all out so they could move it way back. That's an interesting development. But to your question, no one is more equipped to answer that than I am about how tough the rough is. I had when we played there on preview day, I struggled to keep into the wind. It was a windy day. I struggled keeping the ball in the fairway, and for me, it was like a one-stroke penalty every hole that I put it in the rough. Now, I'm not saying these guys are going to have that same problem. I think they're pretty accurate, and I don't know if they're going to struggle so much with the rough. But it filled in very nicely.
the thing I thought about it too was that it was very deceiving. Every time when the ball was in there, yeah. it actually looked like, oh, I can get a club yeah. on it. And that's exactly what it was, sort of how they've sort of cultivated it, that you know, it looks almost good enough where you're like, I'll be aggressive. And then the next thing you know, it's going 45 degrees the wrong way.
That's a great, great point. And I think that's kind of the beauty of this. And they did it for that. They put in that kind of grass just for that reason. The question that I had, I think the question that the average layperson, any of us would have, is that, well, if you want to add the rough, why don't you just let the fairway grow? And they said they couldn't do it because if you let fairway grass grow, it would have been just really, really, really too thick.
Right.
That would have been unfair. So they transplanted 7 acres of fescue and they replanted it along sides of the fairway. And it, because it has that effect, Anthony, that you were just saying, that you can see the ball and it looks pretty good, but if you try to get your club head through there, it's a different story. I think that's going to be interesting. I think Tiger noticed that when he played there this past week. He was there on Memorial Day. And he said it had rained, and he said that it made it pretty thick.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Obviously, they're a little more adept than you and I at judging those lies,
yeah.
but still, it's gonna be interesting, and I'm looking forward to it. I do hope we get a good week of weather, just
yeah.
so that you just want to. I think weather can be the story, like you said. I mean, I want the wind to be up.
Yeah.
I just don't want it to be a waterlogged sort of Bethpage scenario where you don't really get all the aspects. We want to see all the ingredients that make up an important championship. And when you get too much water, it can kind of dampen some of the aspects of the golf course and the players that, you know, you want to see highlighted. I just want to share with you, I just think, before we have to wrap things up because we're up against it, but I just wanted to let you know that my favorite story, I thought your more recent one about the kidney was very heartwarming.
Oh, I
but
appreciate that. Thank
yeah,
you.
But I really love the story that you did about Annie Park and the symbol of Long Island's rich golf heritage. That to me was one of my more favorite ones. I just love the way you captured how she was playing for, you know, the Island Hills and the North Hills and the Rock Hills, to Sands Point, to Bergen Point, and Cherry Valley and Cherry Creek. I really love the way you captured that story. Really captured the wonderful heritage and diversity that makes up Long Island golf.
I appreciate that, and I caught up with Annie Park again, and I'll have a story in the paper tomorrow about her, about the way her career is going, and she said she's still at it.
But all right.
I do appreciate
great.
That.
Well, we look forward to it, and we look forward to reading about it tomorrow. Well, Mark, thank you so much for your time. We hope to do more of this with you, and we really quite enjoyed it.
My pleasure, and I enjoyed it just as much. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks, Mark.
Take care. That was Newsday columnist Mark Herman. Like I said, synonymous, you know, synonymous with Long Island. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say he wrote the book on Long Island golf, but I mean, you know, he's written the articles about the people that really make up. There's a lot about the pro game, but the amateur is golf.
Well, I think the biggest thing that you got from our interview, because I get it from his reading his stuff, is his passion for what he does. I mean, he loves what he do, like I love what I do. And when you get someone that loves what they do, the passion just comes out. You can feel it in his writing. You could hear it in him talking today, which is great. We got to get him on again.
Sure. No, I do. But what I love is that he celebrates the true people that make up the game of golf, and that's the amateur golfer.
Yes.
And he celebrates that. I mean, you can talk all you want about the pros and OEMs and all that stuff, but the people that drive golf are the amateurs.
Yep.
So and he gives them a voice, and that's what I love about it. All right, that's it, folks. Thank you for joining us once again. Woody, thank you for coming on in. I know you got a busy day of fittings over at Pete's Golf, so always a pleasure to have you in. Always a pleasure to have you, the pleasure of your company. Those of you who are listening, have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsese.